Great. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Impact Room. So today I'm joined by Abdul Aziz. Abdul has had a highly accomplished career as a transformational leader across financial services and banking for more than two decades. Described by one individual who worked with Abdul as one of the most influential, motivating, considerate, strong and fair managers I've ever had the pleasure of working under, he has been leading high performance commercially focused teams across both the branch and regional network, and more recently as a customer care director for Barclays Bank, a thought leader who is truly authentic in building an open, inclusive and high performance culture across the business. I'm really looking forward to hearing more today. Abdul, hello. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. And it's a little bit humbling listening to those nice comments.
Well, that's what people said. So we had a recent conversation, Abdul, and you said the one thing that you love to do is help business and teams navigate changes and deploy technologies to ultimately give a good ROI for shareholders. Yet so many businesses get this wrong. So what are your secret ingredients, would you say, that lead to success in that area?
Well, what a question. When you talk about secret ingredients, it's look, what we try and do is in an ever-changing landscape, we're always trying to look for ways to get ahead of the curve and actually try and make sure that, you know, we anticipate customer needs and then adapt accordingly and stuff like that. So from personal experience, I will say there's four key ingredients that I will say has really, really worked for me and I've seen really, really worked in businesses that either I've worked for or those who I follow really, really closely. And the first thing is, I will say, is strategic planning. Really, really critical because, you know, like everything else, when you get that right, you have a good roadmap for your business. Yeah. Understanding what changes you need to go through, actually understand how to help and actually harness the full potential of maybe what technology that's out there that could really, really transform one's business. Really, really critical. And for me, when you talk about, you know, strategic, you know, planning, it's always good to always, you know, what every business wants to do is have a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
You want to be ahead of the curve. So it's about understanding the market, anticipating, very, very good in adapting, and ultimately have good direction and focus. And when business get that right, you are able to align your resources in the right way to achieve the right thing. So that would be the first ingredient that I would say, you know, as strategic planning. The second bit is equally as important, and that is effective communication. Really, really, really critical because in my eyes, this is something that's very, very crucial in helping business navigate and deploying technologies. But actually, the most important thing there is about how do you carry everybody along? How do you create that understanding? How do you foster engagement, promoting collaboration, mitigating resistance that you could have, actually, and ultimately make things happen? And from personal experience, when I've been lucky enough to have led a lot of teams through a lot of changes that just happened, because everyone out there knows we're in the middle of an industrial revolution powered by tech. Right. That is just a fact. If you see what happened during COVID, it really, really accelerated changes that was already coming down the track, you know, and stuff like that. So, but the most important thing is, how do you carry everybody along? And my personal, I would say, you know, secret weapon that I use to carry everybody along is using the storytelling technique, which is really, really important. Because for me, when you get that right, it allows for engagement and buy-in. You have clarity of message. You're able to encourage collaboration because everyone has a skin in the game. And it's something as simple as, look, this is where we are. This is what we're doing really, really well. This is what we're proud of. The reality is, this is where we're going. We don't want to be like people that have got it wrong. That's where examples like people that have failed to adapt. Right, this is what we need to do. This is the help we need. If we get this right, this is what that looks like. But if we don't, it could be quite bad.
Yeah.
And I find that interesting when I particularly deal with key stakeholders, like unions, for example. Because unions naturally, and rightly so, fight for their members.
Yeah.
But ultimately, as a business, it's about getting balance right between, actually, how do we make sure there's sustainability in the business? Because if there's no sustainability, there'll be no jobs anyway for the union members. So carry them along, really, really critical. So storytelling technique is something that has worked for me over years. Yes, you keep perfecting. The most important, carry everybody along. And that is not just for internal, you know, colleagues, but for external customers as well. And when you do that, you get that right, that makes a huge, huge difference. Then the third element, I would say, is strong leadership. Because it's well and good to have a good communication plan. It's well and good to have a good strategy. But if you don't have strong leadership, it actually throws everything away. Because what that does, it helps provide that vision, direction, good decision making, change management, resource mobilization. An important part, which is inspiration, because what you want to do is inspire everyone. You know, when things go well, maybe when things don't even go well, even do more of those. So strong leadership helps make that happen in leading people to where they ought to be, know what they think they need to be. And there's a big, big difference there. And I guess the last piece of the jigsaw is then making sure that there's a good focus of short-term gains, but also long-term sustainability. That is very, very difficult to get right. Because on one hand, you want your shareholders that want something now, but it's also important to get it right. So getting that balance right is something which can be tricky at times. But when businesses are really, really considered and think about getting the balance right, it makes a big, big difference. So I would say those are the four key ingredients that works. That said, it would be wrong for me not to alight some other, I would call, core competencies that businesses should have running through them. And that's going to be something like adaptability, able to adapt to the ever-landing, you know, landscape. I would say embracing innovation and fostering an environment, but that's more culture. Because when you want to do that, it has to be culturally. There's a famous saying that, you know, culture will always eat strategy for breakfast. So what are those cultures that you have? It has to be something where you embrace technology. But to do that, though, you want to make sure that people able to contribute. But that learning piece I mentioned, also very, very critical. So that's what I would say around that, Michelle.
Fantastic. Well, it's such a comprehensive response, Abdul. And it's one of the reasons, you know, when we spoke, when you were talking, you know, I really wanted to get you on here because, you know, you've really sort of encapsulated, I think, everything that's so critical in sort of delivering good change and transformation and this performance culture. And it sounds simple, these little things, but, you know, every single one of them is a critical element, isn't it? And I think, I mean, do you think there's one particular part that is more difficult, would you say? You know, in your experience, have you seen the one element that you think you see people struggle with the most?
I would say the most critical bit is, I would say, from personal experience, is businesses that carry people along really, really well.
Yeah.
They achieve it quicker.
Yeah.
With less resistance. And that is why, you know, the effective communication is really, really critical. Not for all key stakeholders, not just for the employees, which is very, very important, for the entire business. That's where the shareholders comes in. But more importantly, your customers.
Yeah.
So it's not just about talking about what you're doing. It's about what do we want to do, but actually, why are we doing it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's really, really critical. And I think that is the big, big golden nugget. And that's where great leaders are able to do that, they're able to tell their story. Yeah. And that resonates. And when you do that, you carry everybody along, and then you could then really, really spark that, you know, engagement. You have that buy-in. People got skin in the game, and they're likely to actually run through what calls for you while through what could be quite changes at time. And one thing that's also very, very important to really point out, and I tell this to my teams, is businesses naturally don't like making transformation. Because it's quite expensive and quite costly at times. But sometimes it's about survival. But it's about actually how do you make sure you mention that. Who would have thought when Netflix first approached Blockbusters many years ago to say, we see some synergies here, we could do something. It's like, now we got it good. You know, I'll share more that's good. Look, fast forward, you know, a decade later, where's Blockbusters? Nowhere to be found. Yeah. I mean, during the COVID period, Netflix actually, they're showing how the value literally quadrupled. That's just the value. And so it's just about bringing those little pieces to life to really join it up. Hence why, coming back to the storytelling piece, hence why I love it. Bring it all together. And once you do that, you can get the right people with the right priorities, the rest will then happen. And I think maybe the only thing I'll probably will add is, I know you could say maybe one thing's more important, but they're all important. It's almost like a tricycle. If you've got a tricycle and one wheel forms off, it goes in the wrong direction. You need all the, everything to go in the same direction to actually gather speed and momentum.
That's a great analogy, that one. And you know, you just by the elements, like you say, great leadership, storytelling, you know, bringing those people with you. I think, you know, you can see how you've achieved and delivered such powerful change and transformation in your career. So thank you for those points. And another point you made was this service profit chain. You know, it's something that we talk about a lot, but can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So for me, I like to be very, very simple in my brain, because once something's simple in my head, it's easier for me to then, I guess, engage those around me and get that buy-in and make things happen. So for me, business is very, very simple. What service profit chain is all about, it just emphasizes the interconnectedness between employee satisfaction, customer loyalty, and company productivity or profitability. And what I always tell my people is very, very simple. Once you get colleagues who are really, really super engaged and they understand the role they play, they buy into the vision of the organization, guess what they're likely to do? They're likely to deal with their customers in the best version of themselves to make that happen. Once you do that, customers see that, customers buy more from you. Because customers buy people, right?
Yeah.
Customers buy more from you, then guess what that happens? You get more lion's share. Then guess what happens? From a business perspective, you get more business.
Yeah.
You know, compared to your competitors. And then from a shareholders, once you have that, you make money. So that's business in a nutshell. You know, engage colleagues, get a vision to the colleagues. Colleagues then do more, deliver exceptional circumstance, exceptional service or relationship to their clients or customers. Customers buy more because they want to be part of something great. They just love what they see. Business make money. It's just that simple. And I think, when you talk about it, you can say sometimes it can be very simplistic. But for me, the service profit chain also emphasizes certain elements, the importance of actually investing in colleagues. Because to get engaged colleagues, there's certain things that you really, really have to get right. You have to invest in colleague training and development, something I'm incredibly passionate about. You just have to do. You've got to really, really show you care by investing in their well-being. And once you do that, you create a positive environment that translates ultimately to customer experiences and financial success. And that is in a simple, simple way, Michelle.
Yeah, and I think that's quite difficult. And I remember, and I don't know who said it, but if we can't make it seem simple, then we haven't really tried hard enough, have we? I think that's the eloquence and the simplicity comes from the experience and the knowledge. If you can sort of communicate something very simply, and get that message across very simply and get it to resonate with the masses, that's the win, isn't it? I think we overcomplicate so much and we can't get that message across.
I totally agree. My old boss once said, if you cannot explain your strategy to the newest member of staff in 30 seconds, then you've got to revisit it.
That elevator pitch, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. So, some of the things that you, you can just feel and sense the passion, and the energy that you've got. And like, I was at a recent conference and I was listening to Forrester and they were talking about these customer obsessed companies. But, the truth is, to be customer obsessed, you're in the top 1%, top 2%. It's not easy to do. Yeah. And these customer obsessed companies, they're almost two times more profitable than those who aren't. When we talk to you and you've used the phrase customer obsessed before when we spoke, how do we create this culture of customer obsession, Abdul?
Well, the critical thing that you said is culture. It has to really, really be cultural. And cultural means that it affects everyone through the organization.
Yeah.
And, I was blessed enough to work with a big organization that have, a lot of front-like based colleagues, but also back office functions and stuff like that. But for me, actually, whenever I do my key stakeholders, I bring it down to two things. you've got two types of individuals in the business. Those who directly serve the customer and those who support those who serve the customer.
Yeah, yeah.
And that has to really, really come from the top and everybody must buy in. Really, really critical that you get that, you know. Whether you're a data analyst, whatever you do, you must really, really understand what you dare to do and it ultimately comes down to the customer.
Yeah.
And Michelle, I'm sure, as you know, every business always have their own performance sort of metrics, you know, reviews and stuff like that. The most important thing is, you know, do you have the customer at the forefront of it?
Yeah.
Really, that is really, really critical. Because for me, customer obsession is all about prioritizing the need of the customer, understand what their preferences is in every aspect. You anticipate it, you then do something about it. So where the back office function is about understanding customers' pain points. What role you play in making that happen? So there has to be that. It also has to be something like, you know, if your back office colleague, how often do you spend time on the front line? Perhaps once a year, once in 6 months. Start from somewhere to understand, because it's one thing, because look, everyone comes in to do a great job. But often we could easily be siloed in what we do. It's just human nature, right? What gets measured gets done. So if you could, businesses that have done really, really well, and I've been lucky enough to have been part of a business that have actually transformed the customer service culture, I've done stuff like that, where it's just really, really doing stuff like that, you know? So that's what's going to be, I guess, one way of changing the culture, what I just mentioned there. But there also have to be some basic stuff, though, that really, really has to be done, where a business is more be obsessed with understanding customer expectation.
Yeah.
You need to understand what it is. How can I understand what customers really, really want before they know it?
Yeah.
How do you use data that you have? And you see some businesses out there that are very, very good. I heard a story once of my friend who works for Tesco, who said to me, because of the club card initiative that they have, they have so much data that they could answer the customer's need. They even said to me, they could tell a customer is pregnant before they even know.
Wow.
By some of the habits that they have. That's just one little simple way of bringing data to life. So I'm giving a plug to Tesco for one of my friends who work there, who have never worked there, but that's just where I've heard. So anticipating what customers want is really, really critical. Understanding their preferences, what their pain points are, really, really, really critical. Once you then do that, you could then get your teams to really, really mobilize them in such a way where they take real, real ownership for it. You know, yes, businesses will have to provide training, give them confidence through empowerment to say, you know what, you know, why don't you just give them a framework? Don't tell people what to do. Give them a framework to say, look, you're empowered to do what you've got to do to get right for your customer. You know, and I talk about, let's just give one example of pain point, because I could go on and on. Let me talk about customer pain points. From personal experience, and I know from data in my last organization that I worked for, when you pass a customer along to someone else, the more you're handing off, the lesser the NPS score is. So actually, on identifying that from the data, able to identify very, very quickly how to reduce handoffs.
Yeah.
And you do that by two reasons. We did that by, number one, giving people more training and capability, more tools to do that. And secondly, more empowerment, where they could go beyond their remit to get it done. Provided you get it right, hey, ask for forgiveness later. And you do that, and it's interesting, just by doing those two little things, we saw NPS in that business over that performance cycle go up more than 60%.
Wow.
Which is just really, really interesting. So, you know, it's very, very cultural, but there are behaviors that businesses can do, you know, and even to change the culture, you know, things like incentivizing, you know, customer-centric behaviors makes a big difference. It's just little, little things. I said, what gets measured gets done. For every businesses that are doing really, really well, or maybe not where they want, not where they need to be, the question should be, what are you measuring? Are you measuring the right things? Are you rewarding the right behaviors?
Mm-hmm.
As I said, no one comes to do a bad job, but it's about actually if you give them the right framework, the right vision, hey, the rest will sort itself out. But you've got to be relentless, though. Relentless, you know. It takes one bad apple to spoil the barrel.
Yeah.
So, you know, they also have to be that relentlessness, you know, making sure that, you know, assume good intent, but also, you know, take no prisoners where it's appropriate.
That's a really good point, you know, and you've made a lot of them in this conversation. But just because you mentioned Netflix earlier, I remember seeing John Timpson talk ages ago now, and he was he had a very similar mentality to Netflix in terms of this, you know, get ready to start firing people that aren't a Timpsons. And Netflix did the same, didn't they? If you're not suitable, because we spend so much time on the underperformers, you know, on raising people up. And as you say, one bad apple in a team can bring that whole team down, can't it?
I agree. You know, you talked about, you know, I remember there was a particular team I inherited, you know, a couple of years ago. And when I look at, you know, where my people were spending their time, it was interestingly that, you know, 80% of them were spending 80% of their time with the bottom 15%.
Yeah.
Well, you know, imagine if you could free that up and they spend their time with the top 50%. Imagine the disproportionate growth that you're going to get there. So, yeah, and, you know, you referenced Sir Tom Simpson. I'm a big fan of this, especially his upside down management principles, which actually is all about empowering. Yeah. You know, upside down management means that don't always assume people at the top know the answer. You empower, you know what you need to do, actually. And it's just a good way of people having a skin in the game, being empowered to be a real stakeholder and going the extra mile for their customers, right?
Fantastic. So if we look at sort of DE&I, Abdul, as someone who's worked in, you know, a large corporate for 20 plus years and you've risen to the ranks of a senior director, you know, what advice do you give to individuals like yourself, you know, who are looking at opportunities, looking at that corporate or sort of smaller business? And, you know, perhaps there's a lack of representation, there's a lack of people like yourself in those senior leadership positions. What would you say to them?
Wow, that's an interesting question. It's a really, really big one. So if I look from personal experience, you know, someone who joined the organization as a frontline entry, you know, I joined as what we call a BA1, a cashier type role, and I sort of worked my way up to director level and stuff like that. So how did that happen? Yep. You know, I was talking to someone about this, my old boss, actually. Many years ago, I said, look, you know, I think I got lucky. And exact words to me is, no, you didn't get lucky, you make your own luck. And I think there's an element of truth in that. So when I just look back, it comes down to, I would say, three things. It's number one, focus on being your best self. I was very, very smart earlier on to understand what my strengths are and what my area of enrichment are. And I focus on leveraging my spikes. So how do I make my strength really, really better? And actually, so that way, it could be a differentiator for me. So I could stand out from the crowd. So that was something that I did. I believe that you have to keep developing your skills.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to do that, right? No one's going to give you anything. You've got to go grab it.
Yeah.
And every business out there always want to get the best person. Mm-hmm. It's about actually how do you stand out from the crowd. So the first thing is standing out from the crowd by being your best self, either understanding your strength or whatever that is. The second piece I would say is, surround yourself with great people. It's very, very quick to understand who are the people to surround yourself with. There's always a famous saying, good people know good people.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to give a shout out to someone who's probably made the biggest impact in my professional career so far to date, who's someone who you might even know, she leads Elevate Women, Kirsten Williamson-Gunn.
Came to originally meet through Kirsten, wasn't it, I think?
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah,
so she's someone who, I forgot about actually, she's someone who I'll probably give the biggest credit to, because I remember walking up to her office. Actually, she did visit a few years ago, actually, to me. This was 2001, actually, in Knightsbridge. Yeah, 2001 Knightsbridge. I'll never forget, because I'm like, and I said to her, I said, look, I'm doing this job. I've gone as far as I can go. Yeah.
Right.
I like to do something next. I don't know what it is, but actually, I think I want to do this. I want to do that. And the first thing she did is she said to me, you know what? Look, let me go away and take that away. She was the first leader who came back to me the next day, and I was surprised. Came back to me the next day to say, oh, based on our conversation, I spoke to a couple of people. They've got no opportunity, but actually this is what they can do. But what I'm going to do is encourage you to be mentored by a couple of individuals. That was the making of me.
Right.
So one, right, you could say I was a bit bold, which leads to my third point of putting yourself out there, seeking opportunities for visibility and growth, but also understanding who was the person to go to. And actually, that's been, you know, that's been the biggest differentiator to me. Mm. You know, I want people around me to say, well, how have you done it? And it got to the point where if I look at my business unit, you know, there was only two directors in the whole business, you know, and it was quite interesting when I was growing, when I started out. Initially, you create certain limits out there.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing a colleague, a director who looked like me. I was like, wow. Mm. Is it possible to get a black guy, someone of African descent, in a senior position? I'm like, oh, it's doable. And that was the rest for me. So you talk about representation, having good role models, those do help. Certain things colleagues can do themselves, the business will have to do. So if I look at the three things, try and bring that big to wrap, it's going to be number one, you know, develop, be your best self, standing out from the crowd. Secondly, as I said, you know, you really want to make sure surround yourself with great people. That could be a form of mentorship or whatever that is. And number three is you seek out for opportunity for growth and visibility, where you're just being bold by saying, like I went to Kirsten and say, you know, I want to do something. I said, the way it is.
Yeah.
And if you give me the time in the day. I've spoken to seven other people before then who never got back to me. Let me be very, very clear.
Yeah.
And that's why I will always remind that, you know, stuff like that. Maybe they were too busy. Hey. But the impact on me, I only know what it meant on me. So that is the bit for colleagues. And I don't know, maybe I'm going to, maybe from an employer, what they can do. Because I said something earlier, all employers always want to get the best person they've got.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but reality is, and every business out there will say the right things. Yes, they want to create a truly, you know, inclusive environment that is more than just hiring diverse talent. Yes, we know that. Every business is, at least, they've got intention of doing that. Mm. But those who really, really do it really, really well are those who really, really create that inclusive culture where employees feel valued, heard, but more crucially, empowered to contribute their unique perspective. Mm. That's really, really critical. Businesses are very, very good in hiring consultants coming to their business to tell them stuff. To get an external view in. There's a lot of power within. If you could unleash it, it could be really, really golden and stuff like that. So what I've seen work really, really well is, you know, and I've seen the evolution in my old organization, because is having a diverse recruitment panel. Really, really something that really, really helps. Because it helps in making sure that, you know, because everyone's got biases. I've got my own bias. It's just facts. But actually having a diverse means that you get someone else with a different view. Mm. And for me, it's not just about what they look like, but it's about actually how they think. Cognitive, you know, diversity is equally important, not just how we look and stuff like that, because there's nothing more annoying than being a talking individual. It's nothing more irritating than that. I'm never a fan of what you call positive discrimination. No.
Yeah.
But what you've got to do is create a world where actually everybody can be the best they can be. And when you've got underrepresentation, actually understanding what does that look like, seek out, understand more, use your data in a different way and stuff like that. So I guess the pitch where I'll say I've seen work really, really well is, look, something simple. So you got to start from somewhere. The biggest difference is, you know, by having a diverse recruitment panel, has made a big difference, because that's a starter for 10. Mm-hmm. But you have that. Yes, I said everyone's got their own bias, as you and I, we both have. Mm-hmm. And this is where getting everyone through training is really, really important. And actually, it's one of those things that a lot of people often say, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to spend this amount on training. What's my return of my investment? Right, you want something now. Right. There's certain key facts. A diverse workforce is more likely to engage with a diverse workforce that mirrors their customer base are three times more productive than one that doesn't.
Yeah.
That's some of your investment there. But because sometimes, you know, the story is not often told, you know, it's about getting that. And senior leaders really, really do get it. Where the biggest opportunities do lie, though, is in that middle layer leadership structure.
Yeah.
They have the biggest influence.
Yeah.
People at the top, you know, board level, you could do that. Actually, where the game is going to be won or lost is in that middle layer management. Investing time, either in, you know, maybe our colleagues, I don't want to call it just general D&I training, you know, because, you know, we've got unconscious bias just as one.
Yeah.
You know, just doing something on that to think, actually, I've got my unconscious bias, so what do I do about it? It might then be, I've got an unconscious bias. So one thing I did personally, understanding my unconscious bias around a particular group, and I said, actually, what I was going to do is partake in a reverse mentoring scheme. And I said, actually, I was going to do that. And I learned so much from that individual where they coach me all the time around their challenges they're going through. It opens my perspective. You learn more. It's just really fascinating and stuff like that. So, and that's what businesses really, really need to do. Because when you do that, you then foster that in a culture of empathy, collaboration of diverse teams, and more importantly, good decision making. If everyone feels the power to talk out, you often get the right decision. If someone's quiet, you know, if you've got a team of 20 and you've got one or two that's quiet, bringing them into the party really, really matters. Mm-hmm. And talking of party, people often say, you know, diversity and including, you know, diversity is about, you know, inviting everyone. But for me, inclusion is about people are comfortable to dance and even ask for the music to change because they want something that suits them.
Excellent.
It's about being brave. Yeah.
Yeah, and that last point, that I think that's Werner Myers' quote, is the invite to the party, but inclusion is asked to dance. But a great addition that you've just added is, you know, and even ask for the music to change, which is just a brilliant one. But just there's so much in there. And honestly, we could talk about this till the cows come home, I think. But, you know, just to pick up on those points, because you said, you know, the opportunities in that mid-management rung. And this is the where the broken rung is to see senior leadership, you know, that's a major issue. But also when you make the point about you asked seven leaders and only one got back to you. And then when you talk about making your own luck, because how many people would have said, I've asked twice or I've asked three times. What is the point? Do you know what I mean? But you asked seven times and one person came back to you and you said that was instrumental in the change. So our leaders and how they act and how they behave to the, you know, their teams and how they take on board when people come to them, and that middle rung, as you say, and getting people through that, but also that communication and that openness. You said training and development, but also I think it's just having the conversation, isn't it? So freeing people up to talk about this stuff and be aware, that self-awareness, because as you say, our biases are there. But maybe if I'm thinking something, I just go, hang on a second, stop. Why are you thinking it like that? Let's reframe it. There's a bias there, or let me think how I can deal with that differently. They're just so important, aren't they? And such great points, Abdul.
Yeah, it is, Sandra. Look, everyone's got their own map of the world. But where what great leaders do, and I call maybe exposed leaders do, and you could work at it and expose maybe environment you are or what you've done, maybe through learning stuff like that, is you understand your map of the world. But it's also about understanding that someone else's have got their own map of the world as well. So how can I project myself to actually what may be thinking? When unsure, then ask. It could be uncomfortable at times.
Yeah.
But provided you contract upfront to say, look, I've got good intent here.
Yeah.
If I was to misstep, do let me know. It's for a good intent. I think just putting it out there. We're all humans. No one, it's not perfect. And look, and businesses have made huge strides over the, but we still got some way to go, right? But businesses that have really, really got it licked are reaping the rewards. Because customers are not foolish.
Yeah.
They see that.
And I think that uncomfortable point that you make, again, is really important. And I heard from a fantastic lady last week at an International Women's Day event, and they were talking about diversity of thought and how it has to challenge. And you've said, you know, asking the questions, challenging, you know, and it does have to become really uncomfortable. But what happens is a lot of organisations, they start to go, oh, no one's getting on, or oh, they're falling out, or they're sort of challenging each other, and they slip back to the status quo of all being smartly and nodding. But that's not where the good stuff happens, you know. And as you say, if everyone's coming at it from the right intent, and there's not, you know, we're not here from a bad place, we're not wanting to cause difficulties, but can we just say, is that right, or can it be done differently, or whatever, that's where the really great stuff comes, is once we've gone through that uncomfortableness, isn't it? So we've got to get really good at getting uncomfortable in this leadership space and being challenged, rather than just, you know, nodding along and getting the same as we've always got.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, communication again, really, really powerful, always hard, but hey, getting that right. And I guess maybe the last piece I'm just going to really add that, you know, for this particular, you know, topic will be, it's also every business. So if I was a CEO or end of HR, my question was going to be, you know, what is your data telling you? What's data telling you? So what's your representation data? That's one.
Yeah.
What is your pay matrix data telling you? Why is it that, you know, in, you know, most of the top organization, you know, 80%, you know, you get a male earning 80% more than a female doing exactly the same job? That isn't right. If that's the case, I can just, whatever it is, data is, actually, what is data telling us, and what are you going to do about it? Even something simple as appraisal. You know, when you look at it, you know, if you're a colleague that look like me, actually, what's the likelihood of being your PD rating or your appraiser rating at the end of the year compared to another group? And then if you see what the data, if that data then throws us some interesting insights, then actually, you know, be bold to then, you know, do something about it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then, you know, and a journey of 1,000 steps, start with a journey of 1,000 miles, start with a step. Take that step and the rest will get sorted.
Brilliant. Fantastic. A really fascinating conversation, Abdul. Thank you so much for sharing. We're coming to the end of time, and I know I've got to sort of let you go, but is there anything else that you wanted to add before we finish?
No, I just want to say thank you very much for this opportunity to, one, you know, share some of my story. I don't often like talking about myself because I've been brought to be very, very humble. But it's actually, I found it really, really, you know, fun. And thanks for inviting me. And hopefully I get to talk to you soon, Michelle.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your journey. I'm sure it will resonate with so many. And I'll pop on how people can contact you to continue the conversation and things if they wish to do so, which I'm sure they will.
Super.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.